Over the course of the summer, in the wake of the border family separation crisis, a little over 300 parents who had crossed into the United States with their children were deported back to their countries of origin without them. And there are still big fights playing out in federal courts over whether those families waived their rights to be reunified with their children. And if they did, whether they did that with knowledge of what they were signing off on. But it raises this bigger, longer-term question, which is what happens to the kids in the United States. And a big investigation broken by the Associated Press on Monday, casting a window into kind of the worst-case scenario. It tells the story of a child, Alexa Ramos, who's separated from her mother in the final years of the Obama administration at the border, is handed off from immigration authorities to the Office of Refugee Resettlement, from the Office of Refugee Resettlement to a Christian foster services agency, placed with a couple who petitions in-state court for guardianship to adopt her, to take away her mother's rights to be reunified with her, and prevail for a while. How common could that be? Well, we're going to start by talking through the story of how it happened. We're joined by one of the co-authors of that story. Martha Mendoza is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. Her latest investigation with Garance Burke is entitled Deported Parents Can Lose Kids to Adoption. Martha Mendoza, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Why don't you start by just laying out what happened to Alexa Ramos? She and her mother are fleeing domestic violence. They get to the United States. What then?
Well, her mom was arrested, and her mom had a criminal flag on her record. So the authorities, Customs Border Protection, and then ICE checked her record and saw that she had been charged with a crime back in El Salvador. Indeed, she had. Her ex had falsely accused her of convincing a 17-year-old girl to be prostituted. And she
when you say falsely accused, you mean it had already been rejected by a court in El Salvador?
The authorities had already cleared this charge, and I've seen the paperwork on this, and they truly had. In fact, her ex's mom went with her to make sure this was cleared. But that made no difference to the authorities in the United States. A red flag on her record meant that she needed to be separated from her daughter. As you know, today, it's a far lower bar to be separated from your kids. But they were the daughter was taken into a temporary foster care initially, and mom was put in detention. Araceli, the mom, was then rather quickly given a interview because she was seeking asylum. And it usually takes 7 to 10 days after an asylum interview for them to make a ruling. But within 24 hours, they said, yep, you have qualified as somebody having a credible fear of being persecuted or tortured when you go back home. Again, things have changed so that domestic violence is no longer necessarily a legitimate, credible fear for asylum. But at the time it was. Nonetheless, she was rapidly deported by a judge who 95% of the time does deport or reject asylum claims. So Alexa was moved into long-term foster care in the United States.
So she's in the situation that most of the children separated this summer landed in. She's under the supervision of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, but farmed out to a private nonprofit that does foster placements.
Correct. And Bethany Christian Services, their social workers talk about how they were encouraged to recruit foster parents, particularly in churches. This is a pretty Christian and religious area in Michigan. And so they are recruiting foster parents. And the foster family that Alexa went to had in the past two Salvadoran girls, and they also had three daughters of their own.
So
and they really fell in. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, one of the striking things about this agency is that you spoke to someone who used to work there. And again, they're doing these placements on behalf of a federal agency. A former supervisor said that when all of these younger kids showed up, quote, everyone was really excited about that. They just felt that if these kids could know Jesus, everything would be okay. It's one thing to be a Christian organization that's taking care of kids. It's another one to be an organization that sees taking care of kids as part of its proselytizing work.
Yes, but if you deep dive into it, that's a broader Christian movement in the United States, and maybe on the West Coast we're not so entrenched in this, but there's a real move to have Christians respond to the global refugee crisis and foster spiritual beliefs in people in need. This seems like an opportunity to share their spirituality and help others. They feel like it's a real calling.
So they do a foster placement. And again, this is quite common. Kids aren't allowed to be held in any form of detention for more than 2 weeks under an existing federal court settlement. So if they don't have family or relatives they can stay with nearby, foster care is pretty much the only alternative. How does that turn into a battle over whether her mother has the right to ever see her again?
First of all, I just have to tell you that this girl, Alexa, is adorable. She's and bright, and she looks people in the eye, and she giggles, and it's very hard to be around her without being enchanted by her. I've been around a lot of kids, and she's a remarkably engaging little girl. The Barrs, the family, the Michigan family who had her, Sherry and Mitch Barr, really adored her and really cared about her, and became concerned pretty quickly that she would be harmed by her mom if she was returned. This was what they, from their observations of her, she was learning to talk, learning to speak English, and they felt like she was expressing to them that she was afraid of her mom and that her mom would hurt her. And so they got a lawyer. Even though they had signed papers that said that they knew they couldn't do this, they got a lawyer and they went to their local court and appealed to a local state court judge that this girl was going to be harmed if she was returned. And so her deportation orders needed to be stayed. And they said that they argued that they needed to have guardianship. And the judge initially agreed. And her mother back in El Salvador didn't even know this was going on. So the mother back in El Salvador figured that the federal immigration judge was ordering her daughter to be deported and that they'd be reunited. But at that time, actually what was happening was this couple was in court asking that entire process to be stayed.
How did her mother find out?
Her mother found out through the consul in El Salvador and the basically kind of the equivalent of the State Department in El Salvador became aware of this through a child services agency that was working on the little girl's behalf. And they intervened. And her mother began making just really sad appeals on Facebook for people to get involved. And they, you know, just crying. This was right around Christmas time. She had, you know, bought gifts for her daughter, just saying, you know, this is not your daughter. This is my daughter. Please don't take her from me. She came from my body. I love her so much. And those appeals on Facebook had millions of views in El Salvador. And soon the Salvadoran consul in the United States and the foreign ministry in San Salvador were pushing for her return.
But the bottom line is, she's not in the courtroom. The state judge in Michigan is not watching viral videos in Spanish.
I don't think he had any, I'm sure he had no awareness of this. And he wasn't particularly familiar with the federal agencies involved. You know, Department of Homeland Security, is this Immigration Customs Enforcement, is this Office of Refugee Resettlement? He said, this is kind of hard to pin down exactly who the interested parties are. And their local attorney in Michigan said he had a loose understanding that that the family had prior guardianship and there had been some order. So, and this attorney also said he didn't quite know where things were. So the judge told him, come back and we'll have a full guardianship hearing in a few weeks and try to just notify everybody. The judge also said, every time I get one of these, I learn a little more. And that to us as journalists was an indication that this is not the only time this happened.
You think he was referring specifically to immigration cases like this with a guardianship fight?
I do. And, of course, Bethany Christian Services, the group that had had assigned this little girl, Alexa, to the foster home later told us that of the 500 kids they had had cared for through the Office of Refugee Resettlement over the years, actually 9 had ended up being adopted by American families.
So how does the law work? Are all 9 of those cases clear-cut violations of federal law, or are there circumstances under which the adoptions could be legit?
Well, in talking to the Department of Health and Human Services, they have a process called special consent by which they do allow them to legitimately turn custody of a kid in federal custody over to state custody through the state courts. And we're currently going back and forth with them, trying to figure out how often this happens. Initially, we said they just don't track it, but then when we learned that there is a legal process called special consent, we've asked them how many of those happen. They've said they would have to go through every single file of every kid they ever had, but I don't think that's the case. I think we're going to be able to pin this down further.
But this has been the argument that the federal government's been making in the lawsuit that was brought over family separation, is that they can't return some of these kids to their parents, either because they think it was an abusive situation, so it would be a problem to return the kids to the parents, or because they simply can't find the parents. But they're laying out circumstances under which they think it would be okay to kind of hand the kids off to someone else.
Yes, and it's important to note that it actually has happened before, where a Guatemalan mother lost her kid to adoption. She had been picked up in an immigration raid, and while she was in jail, a couple got custody of her baby and ended up gaining full custody. And it was, again, a state court that granted them that right. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court in Missouri, and they ruled against the mom, who had by that time been deported. So there are situations, if a kid is being abused. In one situation, there was a foster kid who asked to stay with his foster family and wanted them to have custody. And I should also point out that Alexa, when she was returned to her mom, this little girl was asking for her foster parents. She called them Mama Foster and Papa Foster. She didn't speak Spanish. She didn't recognize her mom. So there have been situations where they want to stay with their foster family, or, as you point out, they can't find their parents because the separation happened very quickly this year. The bottom line is that in the United States, child welfare is almost always handled by states. You have your Child Protective Services. That's a state agency. And so now we have 13,000 kids who are in federal custody, and it's not, the federal agencies aren't really set up to deal with that.
Speaking to Martha Mendoza, she's an investigative journalist with the Associated Press, just out with Garance Burke with a piece on Monday entitled Deported Parents Can Lose Kids to Adoption, tracing the story of how one child was separated from her mother, then adopted by a couple in Michigan who convinced a state court to take away her mother's rights to see her while the mother was back in El Salvador. In a way, you're chronicling the exceptional case, because what happened was that Araceli Ramos, the mother, was able to become a viral sensation using Facebook Live. She got 2.5 million views on one of her videos, and this made her representatives in the Salvadoran government kind of leap into action and got her case in front of a federal judge.
Yes, this was an exceptional case. Another thing that made it exceptional is that it's in Michigan, where child welfare records are open. And so we were able to really, for the first time, track down the process by which this can happen, looking at the legal records and looking at transcripts from the hearings. Child Protective Services and child safety laws mean most of these cases take place in private. And even in this situation with this little girl, Alexa, we knew her name and we knew her birthday, but we had about 150 courts that we needed to call and convince clerks to look through their files and see if her case had taken place in their court in order to get the file. There's thousands of courts in the United States, and they all handle child welfare slightly different ways. And so this was an exception, but every one of them is an exception.
I guess that's the ultimate question that's raised by your reporting. it seemed remarkably easy for it to happen in this case. Do we have any idea how common it is for children who've been forcibly separated from their parents by immigration authorities to be adopted by Americans?
Well, the only data point we have on that is Bethany's 9 out of 500 going back a few decades
in
Michigan.
And that's entirely dependent on their own record keeping and self-reporting.
Exactly. But, you know, as you've pointed out, this was an investigative report, and we have filed all kinds of public records acts and are going back and forth with the federal government to try to get more numbers on this. I should point out, the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Homeland Security did not dispute our reporting at all.
So, I mean, basically, ultimately, this is rectified by a federal court. The state court had overstepped its jurisdiction, but the fundamental problem seems to be the power imbalance, right? Because Araceli Ramos had been deported because she didn't have representation. There was no one to speak up on her behalf in that Michigan courtroom. How representative is this of, say, the circumstances of the hundreds of families who are tied up in the child separation crisis right now?
Well, I think that if you think of your own 2-year-old sitting in a federal courtroom without you there, maybe with an attorney, maybe not, that's something that's playing out every day in the United States. And so I don't know, I don't want to say that this is representative of anybody's case in terms of the details and how it went down, but I can say there are a lot of young kids who were separated from their parents who are now facing legal decisions without their parents being involved.
Araceli and Alexa Ramos were separated when they crossed the border under the Obama administration. What's changed in how these cases are handled since President Trump took office?
Well, the inclination at that time was to keep kids with their parents. And so if Araceli's criminal record either had been able to have been checked or if she had had legal representation, they would have been kept together. But today the default is to not keep them together in general, especially under the period where there was zero tolerance and so many kids were separated from their parents. To be honest, if she walked across the border and presented herself at this point seeking asylum, I think the only difference is she might have spent more time in detention. The mom might have spent more time in detention. I think it would go down very much the same way.
Wow. The other thing that was particularly striking about your reporting is that her daughter, Alexa Ramos, 2 years old at the time, was basically treated as an adult by the court system. She's handed a summons for a deportation proceeding.
Yeah, this is something that's currently being contested in federal court as well. She was handed a summons that said that she must. It's a notice to appear, and she must appear at a time to be determined. And this was a girl who could, you know, 2-year-olds know their colors. Maybe they're learning to count. Maybe they know names of animals and can say milk, please, or something like that. But to be handed legal documents and have an adult federal officer sign off and say, I have now notified this individual of their rights, it's a farce.
How does the adoptive couple, the Corys, feel about this in retrospect?
It's been very painful for them. They were heartbroken. They felt painted into a corner. They genuinely believed that this little girl was going to be their own baby of their family. They want her in their heart forever, and they feel pretty crushed by the system. The mother, foster mother, Sherry Barge, says no one wins in this one. They are a little bit in touch with Alexa and her mom through Facebook, but it's a little bit.
Do they feel any regret for the role they played in taking away her mother's parental rights?
Not that we have heard them express, no. No.
Martha Mendoza, thank you for the reporting. Thank you so much for speaking to us about it.
I appreciate your interest.
Martha Mendoza is an investigative journalist with the Associated Press. She won the Pulitzer Prize for her investigation into a massacre committed by U.S. forces during the Korean War. Her latest investigation, co-authored with Garance Burke, is entitled Deported Parents Can Lose Kids to Adoption. She joined us via Skype.